Welcome to Follow the Sound. Each week we explore a different aspect of music, be it history, albums, or whatever the heck we feel like doing at the time, because that's what we do. I'm your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me is, of course, my friend, Jacob Crum.
And the morals that they worshipped will be gone, and the men that spurred us on sit in judgment, all wrong.
Wow. Now, of course, if you know those lyrics, then you will understand exactly the album that we are doing for our album review today, and that is Who's Next by The Who.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't know this album, shame on you, because this album is amazing. And it's one of these albums that pretty much all of their major hits really came from. And, I mean, it's pretty much all the songs on here were used for, you know, a CSI TV series, which is, you know, fun in and of itself. But The Who is, of course, a band that is very cool to me. I always liked The Who more than I liked The mm-hmm. Stones
yes.
or The Beatles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or I
agreed.
Mean,
agreed.
Because The Who were, I don't know, they were crazier for one part. And then in the second part, they just, in my opinion, had better singing
yeah.
and better music. Now, of course, they didn't do the harmony parts like a lot of, you know, like a lot of Beatles songs and stuff like that. But their stuff, I don't know, their music resonated with me more than any of the other bands did.
Yeah, agreed. Pastor Randy Rhoads.
Yes.
Would always walk up to me and he'd go, "Hey, guy, are you a Stones fan or are you a Beatles guy?" And I'd always go, "I'm a Who guy." And he goes, "Too late. Pick a band before them." and then he'd go, "The Beach Boys?" And I go, "Nope, The Animals." And that was how every conversation with him started.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Good guy. I liked him a lot. And not that he's dead. He's living in California.
I just don't have his phone number. That's
sorry,
all.
Sorry, Mr. Rhoads. I am friends with his daughter on Facebook.
Are
though,
you
so,
now?
Yes, Jamie.
Ooh.
So, but yes, we're doing Who's Next by The Who, and it's just beyond a brilliant album, in my opinion. I mean, I can already tell you that I'm probably going to rank this at least a 9, if not a 10 by the end
right.
Of listening through to it. But, I mean, you guys, you know exactly who The Who are. You know that it's just, I mean, a brilliant album. You know that it doesn't matter what I actually say here, because we're just going to get to the music. And, you know, I think that that's what we should do. But I will give you a little bit of backstory. It was released in 1971. It was recorded in 1971. And it was done at a couple of different places, but mainly Olympic Studios. And then in, some other stuff, Island Studios in London. You know, just some good stuff as far as the background goes. And if you haven't seen the cover, of course, is just great. It's them standing in front of this weirdly concrete pillar in what looks like a desolate planet. But of course, The Who currently, you know, being of Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend and Keith Moon, and of course John Entwistle. Entwistle, that's a weird name, actually.
It is, and yeah. I deserve to be whipped for like not remembering that.
Ah, well, is what it is. But, of course, Keith Moon tragically dying later on. He's, you know, a little bit more remembered in the rock and roll mythos. But either way, let's actually get on to this album already. And, of course, if you don't know this, the first song on the entire album is the masterpiece of Baba O'Riley.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that amazing intro with the what was essentially a keyboard at the time.
Yes.
You know, with all
Hammond
of these
organ.
Cool, with all of these cool digital sounds, and that was really just Pete Townsend messing around with stuff before he finally found something that sounded really, really cool. And then, you know, piano coming in, guitar coming in, drums coming in with that great little fill.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, these great lyrics sung by Roger Daltrey, and then getting around to Pete Townsend just doing his thing, and then singing, of course, that great part with Teenage Wasteland. And I've actually heard that for the longest time, he absolutely hated the fact mm-hmm. that everybody thought that Teenage Wasteland was all about, it was like a party kind of thing.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
Everybody, you know, like, you know, oh, yeah, we're getting wasted, you know, kind of thing. And that he absolutely despised that because he said that that wasn't what it was supposed to be about. It was supposed to be about basically wasting your lives.
Okay.
And so, but everybody thought that it was some type of weird party reference, you know, but it was not. So, yeah, there you go. Baba O'Reilly.
Great track.
Great track.
Great song. When those lyrics come in. Out here in the streets gets me every time.
Yeah.
Every time. It just punches me right in the gut.
Yeah.
And I know why you love this album so much, Brian.
Yeah. Why?
I'll tell you why. Even though Pete Townsend didn't always play one live, this album was recorded with what? A Gretsch 6120.
Oh, yes.
1957 Gretsch.
There you go.
And that Hammond organ that you're hearing, mm-hmm. I don't know that he was on this track. But Al Cooper from Blood, Sweat, and Tears played the Hammond organ on a lot of these.
So. Oh, wow. Cool. I didn't actually know that one.
He there you go.
Taught me something. But let's move on to the next song, which is called Bargain. Now, of course, that song has been used in like a ton of commercials, but who cares? Because that's still just a great song.
Yeah, it really is. And the thing that stands out actually has nothing to do with this album, but I heard your dad and Randy Rhoads sing this at somebody's birthday party.
That sounds about right.
And yeah, there you go.
I always loved it when he's like, I call that a bargain, the best I ever had, and then screams yeah. out, the best I ever had. Like, that's so great. You never hear that in songs in general, where they repeat the line and they repeat it sort of screaming it.
Yeah, yeah.
But even down to the effect that they use on his vocals, mm-hmm. though, I don't even know how they did that. It was kind of a reverb with like a doubler thrown in there.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just weird. Like, you can go through this album so many times and just find new little things that they did. It's like, I've heard that song at least 50 times, never once actually paid attention to the effect that they were doing on his vocals. There really? You go. Yeah.
Because that's like the standout thing of the song to me.
I never really paid attention because I was always listening to like the drums or the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the riff that, I mean, Pete Townsend, the king of the like rhythm riff.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily the lead bit, but just the rhythm that it dun, dun, like nobody did that kind of rock music back then.
Stadium rock. He started it. You know?
Exactly. Which is one of the reasons why I love The Who more than I like a lot of the other bands. Everything they did was, you know, very melodic and stuff, but everything he did was very rhythmic. And, you know, that and Hammers Home with Keith Moon being such a great rhythm player that he was, like, even though he kind of botched the rhythm at a couple of different points, just everything that he played over it was just fantastic. That fill that he did at the beginning of the song is just a great, great fill. And of course, as drummers know, he didn't have hi-hats, he just had cymbals and then toms and then like the snare and then the, like the double bass.
Yeah,
it's a crazy way to set up a drum set, but it worked so well for him. All right, let's move on to the next song. Next song is called Love Ain't For Keeping. I think this is almost more of an American sound than some of the other songs that they have.
Yeah.
Mainly because of just this sounds a bit more country rock kind of than.
Are you saying the guitar sounds like a Telecaster on like getting chicken picked?
No, not necessarily. It's just.
Or are you just saying it doesn't have that British like downstep halfway through the verse that everything else has?
Sure. Yeah. Let's go with that. It's just that for some reason, this one sounds more to me like they were in the Southwest.
Yeah.
And like that's where they wrote the song.
But that's like the British invasion thing. It's the same thing that like the Nirvana was doing with all their songs. Like where in the chorus, you have the downstep on the third line where the vocals go down.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the British way of thing. So I guess you're right. This doesn't have that.
Yeah.
But I love the lyrics of this song.
Yeah.
I still hold that the best lyricist who's ever lived was Roger Miller.
Okay.
Right? Trailers for Sailor Rent, rooms to let, 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets.
No pets.
No pets. Yeah. The guy could really paint a picture with like three lines. And this here, you know, laying on my back in newly mown grass, rain is coming down and I know the clouds will pass. So this is a Roger Daltrey song. So good on you, Roger. I really like this one.
All right. So the next one on the list is called My Wife. And this was actually Entwistle's only writing credit on the entire
song
album.
On the album.
So here you go. This song is called My Wife.
Yeah.
Wow. So you can tell, obviously, that was sung by John Entwistle.
Yes.
And it's the only one that he's got that on the entire album. And as you can hear, it sounds like a Who song, but it sounds like a Who song that was performed by somebody else.
I appreciate how dirty they were willing to go with.
Yes.
For that song on that album.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't know if the thought was like, hey, we know this is like a B-side, so we're going to put it on the A-side because it's Entwistle's only song.
You know,
we'll put it on the A-side, but we know it's a B-side and we don't expect it to get airplay, so let's just get it. Just do it the way we want to do it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so now we're going to move on to the longest song. Or no, it's not the longest song on the album. Never mind, second longest song on the album called This Song Is Over.
I should have known it. She tried to find me. Our love is over.
Some good leads there, and some great long fills by Keith Moon.
Yeah,
but I know we were talking when the music was playing, but I really like Pete Townsend's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's something about his voice that really connects with me. Like, it's the emotion that he puts into it, the way that he kind of sounds like he's about to just completely hit the wrong note, and then he doesn't. Like, he stays on pitch, and I don't know. Like,
I mean, he does sound vulnerable and like he's going to break down and cry at any second.
Yes, that's what I like.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I like. Okay. And I mean, and as anybody should know, if they're fans of The Who, before this, he actually like had wrote and worked on basically what was going to be like a rock opera that was this sort of weird sci-fi thing. And he'd done all of this stuff for it and then completely scrapped it all. Because he felt that it wasn't going to be good enough and there was no way he was ever going to release it and blah, blah, blah. And so then he decided to move on and record another album, which became Who's Next. And it was basically just from him being so frustrated with the previous work and then throwing it all away.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing, is that he actually is like that. He you know, has that sort of fragility to the way that he makes his art. And... if it's not up to his standard, then he's going to absolutely despise
yeah.
it. And this album was absolutely up to his standard. So, do you have anything else to add?
No, other than going into this album, they changed labels and management and kind of everything.
It was all sorts of stuff.
It was a really long road to get to this. And that's a story I might tell later. I'm not going to go on it now because I just haven't read enough.
Yes. All right, so let's get on to the next song, which is, of course, called Getting in Tune.
I'm singing this note 'cause it fits in well with the cards I'm playing. I can't pretend there's any meaning hidden in the things I'm saying, but I'm in tune, right in tune. I'm in tune, and I'm gonna tune riding on you, riding on you, riding on you. I get a little tired of having to say, do you come here often? But when I look in your eyes, I see the harmonies and heartache soften.
All right, I know you're going to call me crazy, Brian.
Go ahead.
But I think that they took George Harrison, chopped him up into little pieces, and everybody ate a little bit of his soul to get that song. Because that if that's not a George Harrison melody and harmony right there, I don't know what is.
You're crazy! No, I'm kidding. Actually, that makes almost mm-hmm. sense, except for the eating part of his soul, I guess.
Well, yeah.
But here's actually what I was thinking. How in the world yes. did The Who not sue Paul McCartney for Live and Let Die?
Yeah,
it's the exact
yeah.
same
really
chord
is.
Progression.
It really is.
I was halfway expecting it to like all of a sudden stop into dent, da 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 da.
And why is that song still get radio play?
Live and Let Die?
Yeah.
Because it's an impressively orchestrated song.
Or corporations.
Well, there's that, but I've seen him play it live, and it's amazing. There's, like, explosives and fire and...
Yeah, or you could just have a really good arrangement and play it.
Hey, I like Paul McCartney, and I like his band, and I like the way that he does all that stuff. But
look, somebody has to be your counterpoint, Brian, and I'm the only one in the room.
That is true. That is true. I'm just saying. Actually, I that song always caught me off guard because I was like... You know, okay, what he's singing about being in tune, I guess, and it sounds to me like he was just goofing around and then started singing these weird lyrics, and they're like, okay, let's go, you know, let's play that. And it sounds like, seriously, they were just goofing around when they started to record it, which is why Entwistle on bass is, like, doing all these amazing runs on the bass line.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think, you know, that he's, like... I mean, he's obviously a very talented musician, and most of the time he's just sort of playing the rhythm of the hit. It's like, but then all of a sudden he's just, you know, like just down the neck. It's I don't know, it's crazy. But let's move on to the next song, which is, of course, Going Mobile. Once again, another great Pete Townsend song, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I love that song. And actually, I like to do my top fives.
Okay.
Easily
okay.
In my top five driving songs.
Fair enough.
Along with Don't Stop Me Now by Queen and Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. Like, there's three of my top fives.
I would replace Bat Out of Hell with See Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
All right. But I haven't heard this song in years.
Really?
And forgot how much synth was in it.
Yeah.
And it's going everywhere.
And, I mean, of course, the acoustic guitar there being played. There's no electric guitar, as far as I could tell. But I love Keith Moon's trills that he does with his drumming. He does those several times throughout the song. And, actually, those are one of his signature things, along with the stuff that he does on the toms.
But
I love those hits that he does. It shows that he actually did have a fairly fast hand speed, which is how you get that kind of stuff. I don't even think I can do it, but that's because I don't have very fast hands. I'm very steady. I can play great beats, but I'm not exceptionally fast, so I can play punk
one of these
music.
One of these days, just try and play Cherokee.
No, I'm not gonna do it. All right, we're going to move on to the next song, which is, of course, Behind Blue Eyes.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man. Behind blue eyes, no one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. My love is vengeance that's never free. No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings like I do, and I blame you. No one bites back as hard on their anger. None of my pain or woe can show through. But my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience. That's never free.
I know we got to cut it there. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to listen to all that, but hey, man, that song, if you just sit and read the lyrics, they are so sappy. You just want to like walk over and like pat the 16-year-old on the back and go, "You're right, yeah, nobody understands you," and then slap the Shasta out of their hand and tell them to, you know, cheer the fuck up and go play some baseball. Like, but that song, man, it takes me right back to being 16 years old and driving around just trying to find some time to myself. Oh my God, I love that song.
Yeah. No, I mean, I could tell just from the way that when he started singing, like, you got a super happy look on your face. So, but, I can't really add anything to that. It was just such a great song. One of the few times where they actually utilize harmonies in the vocals.
Yeah, yeah.
Very simple guitar part in the beginning, you know, just real basic setup, but just profound lyrics. I mean, just there's nothing more I can add to that. So, let's move on to the next one, which, of course, is the final one of our night, Jake.
Oh, well, let's do it.
We won't get fooled again.
Mm.
Bird of song.
my God. What a great song, yes. Man.
Now you know why that song is like saved for like every double encore that the Who have ever done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like 8 minutes long.
Well,
for, on the recording itself, which is incredible. But I mean, beyond that, it incorporates everything that made the Who amazing.
Yes.
Like it had these cool little bits to it. Had a great guitar riff, great bass riff, fan-frickin-tastic drums. In fact, to this day, I still consider the beat that he does there, that, you know, dude, dot, dude, dude, dot, dude, bop, mm-hmm. ba, dude, mm-hmm. dot. Like, when he does that, I still consider that to be, like, a Keith Moon thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody else has done it before. I'm sure, you know, tons of people did it. But for me, in my mind, that drum beat is specifically Keith Moon's because of that this song. And I still use it. I still play it to this day whenever I get a chance to. And yes, I play it at church because that's what I do. So this song to me is just absolutely a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant song. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Beginning to end.
Brilliant song.
Yes. Even the hand claps.
Even the hand claps that are in there. Just everything about it is great. To the nth degree. Like whenever they sat down to write this song, it was just, you know, the muse struck them that day.
Yeah.
So it's just it floors me how good that song actually is.
Okay, so of course I'm gonna talk about the bass player, right?
Go for it.
So I haven't actually gone off about John Entwistle yet. But I'm going to now.
Go ahead.
I don't think he gets the credit that he really deserves in, like, the history of rock and roll, partially because, like, every other bass player has one thing that they're tied to.
Yes.
Right? You're like Jaco. Oh, he's left-handed. He plays a jazz bass, and he did some thumping.
Yeah.
Hey. Right? John Entwistle, on the other hand. Everyone's like, oh, well, he plays a Thunderbird. Well, actually, he changed equipment with, like, every record, every tour. Every, like, 6 months, he had a new, like, set rig and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But what he didn't change was his technique.
Yeah.
And in this song right here, if you want to know how to get that weird, like, twang sound out of your guitar that he's doing on all those riffs, it's a felt pick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a felt, like, ukulele pick.
Weird.
So there you go.
I know some of the other stuff that he did. Some of the things I noticed when he was playing, most of the time when you've got a bass player, they use like two fingers. And he would use three.
Yes.
And he would hit the same note just really, really quickly, like trill it.
Yeah.
And that to me was always amazing.
Yeah.
Then the fact that he was just, you know, standing there like doing all these cool riffs and stuff. I mean, like note for note, he was probably better than Townsend was at playing any kind of lead. And then like he was honestly probably the best musician in the band.
Very efficient with his movements.
Very efficient, yes.
Billy Sheehan's another guy that does three finger, four note movements.
Mm-hmm.
And he straight up says he got it from John Entwistle. That's how you play a four note pattern with three fingers.
There you go.
And use your pinky to mute. Another thing that he does a lot in this song, and it's like kind of the Entwistle thing people talk about, is that you use your left hand or your hand on the fretboard to actually pluck strings.
Yeah.
And it puts a whole lot of movement on the string, and you have to be careful to like mute the strings next to it. And that's, you can hear that all over this.
Yeah.
Where he's just plucking open strings with the same finger that he's fretting with.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I really love this album, Brian. And the only criticism I can even drum up for this is that it doesn't have Ivor the Engine Driver on it.
Well, I did go for the original thing. You can get like a deluxe edition that has additional songs and stuff. We didn't go through that one. We just went with the original.
Of course.
And that's because the original is, well, I mean, that's just how it was originally intended to be listened to, at least, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But this album to me is easily in my top 10 of all time. Easily in my top 10 of all time.
Man, I don't know. I don't know if this is my favorite Who album.
See, they're absolutely my favorite Who
really?
Album.
Really? Because Live at Leeds.
Okay, I kind of
live at Leeds.
Well, for me, like I consider, you know, like
live albums
are like a
and
separate
studio
thing.
Studio albums are two different things. Yeah,
it's two different art forms mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, it's both music, but one is like a very prepared thing, and the other isn't. Right. That, and if you can make both of those great, then you truly are an awesome band. Like I've told you, I've told you numerous times about how I listened to a band, you know, on the radio or on CD or something, and I thought they were great. And then I saw them live, and I was just like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, this is horrible. But, or like vice versa. I heard a song live and was like, wow, that's actually really good. And then I listened to the recording, and it's just as crappy as can be.
Well, that happens a lot with bands where you go in and you don't know what songs are going to make the album, and then later when you're playing it live, you kind of rediscover the song and completely change it.
You redo it and you change it. Yeah, exactly. So,
or you just change it because you're bored of playing it that way and you want to have fun with it. You know, that's another thing, too. Anyway.
So one of the things, though, is that The Who are still a touring group.
Yes.
They are still going out and putting on shows. I don't know how Roger Daltrey's voice has maintained itself, but I know Pete can still do some stuff. And Pete can still play and all of that. But actually, if you didn't know, they've got like they're touring musicians.
Yes.
Include, Simon Townsend, who is, of course, Pete's son. A couple of other people, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Zach Starkey.
Okay.
As in Richard Starkey's son, as in Ringo Starr's son.
Yeah.
And actually, the symbols that he uses, I so want them. Because what they are is, you know the Who's symbol. It's like the RAF, like, circle.
Yeah.
His symbols are painted like that.
Oh, that's cool.
I totally want those. Like, for no other reason than just that. So,
second kind of cool.
Yes. But, This album is, of course, you know, after listening to it, I'm all hyped up and stuff. So, for 2 weeks in a row, I'm going to give this one a 10.
Ooh, man. This is so hard.
Part of me doesn't want to do that.
Yes.
Part of me doesn't want to do that because it's then 2 weeks in a row where I've done an album and I've given it a 10. But that I can't help it because to me, there isn't a song on this album that I would skip.
Right.
I could listen to it at any given time. And like if I'm following my own criteria, it's a 10.
And see, this is where the wheels in my brain begin to turn.
All right.
Because I feel that like, newer LPs kind of have to be graded a little bit on a curve because they're required to have like 12 or 14 songs on it instead of, what is it, 8, 9?
Yeah, 9.
9, yeah.
Some of them are super long, though, so they could have had more songs.
True.
But
that's true. That is true. However, man, looking at this and when it was released, what the
71,
band... 71. What this band had already done, where music was at...
Yeah, I mean, they were leaps and bounds ahead of, like, everybody else at the time.
Yeah.
If somebody had listened to this, like, I mean, yeah, it's 1971. But, honestly, a lot of the stuff that they were doing later became utilized in the 80s. And then, I mean, even to this day, still being utilized. But the sound that they created does not sound like a band in the 70s. Nothing else in the 70s sounds like this.
Right.
Nothing in the 60s sounded like this. It was so incredible and so ahead of its time that it like nobody else knew what to do with it. They just knew that they loved it. So,
yeah, I mean, so like 3 years from 3 or 4 years from now, you have Rush comes out with their first album.
Mm-hmm.
We are 14 years from having Reverse Gates on drums with Peter Gabriel. Like I'm thinking of revolutionary recording techniques and albums.
Yeah.
And influence. This same year, 71, I mean, the Beatles just broke up. There's not a whole lot going on. This has a Harman organ and synthesizer effects in it and a mini Moog. And it's never not rock.
Even Behind Blue Eyes, as the sort of mellow thing that it goes through, still ends in a rock form.
It's still a rock song. So I don't have to give this song a 10, or I don't have to give this album a 10, because it just defended itself against my arguments.
Yes.
So there you go. It's a 10.
There you go. So, folks, hopefully you enjoyed this as much as we did, because this was just a great, great album to review. And honestly, if you've never listened to it, then shame on you, because you should have. And at the very least, I know if you haven't listened to it, then you have heard some of the songs before, because they're played everywhere. Like I said, they're on every freaking CSI intro out there, as far as I know. But hopefully you've liked this. And if you like our show, you can help support us by going to our page, followthesoundpodcast.com, and clicking on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side. Go to Amazon, and you can do all your normal shopping. It won't cost you anything extra. We get a little bit of money back, and it just helps us keep going. And we can earn a little bit of money from that. It's just a simple thing. And like I said, it doesn't cost you anything else. So you can go to the website, click on the banner, or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. And we would also like to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to put on the show. You can check out any of their podcasts at lineupmedia.fm. Find some fantastic shows. Another music show that is on our network is called Celtic Music Lab. It's hosted by John Baldwin, who is an American, yes, but he has a lot of connections to Irish music. And so he gets some fantastic interviews, and he gets to play some samples of just some top-notch, high-quality Celtic music that I really think that you would enjoy if you're into Celtic music, because, you know, that's all they do, nothing but Celtic music. One of these days I'll get John on the show just so we can have a nice chat about some cool stuff, because he's also a top-notch musician in his own right. And so, folks, I hope you enjoyed it. I had a blast. Jake, I know you had a blast. But this was Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. And of course, my co-host, Jacob Crum.
Smash your head against the wall.
And there, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.